Welcome, venturers, to another episode! First off, we want to say thank you for your patience lately with our delayed podcast episode releases. As we have made some changes to our editing processes, we've encountered some bumps in the road, but we are continuing to do our best with the resources at our disposal. With that said, I don't want to keep you from the action, so let's hop in. Thank you so much to Emily Mayo for composing our wonderful theme song. Thank you to Tabletop Audio for providing additional ambient music. And thank you to all you fine folks who support the show by leaving ratings, reviews, hanging out in our Discord, and supporting us via Patreon. Y'all rocks our socks. Alright, so here's a recap of what happened last time, then we'll dive right in. Last time on Venture Maidens. Our maidens get further embroiled in the mystery of Lily Hall as they meet with the members of the Olyana family. After hearing testimony from the groom and the mother of the bride, our heroes decided to keep watch over Enzo's bedroom to catch whatever dark force has been visiting him night after night. While Aoife took up watch, Lou and Cassie went for a romantic moonlit boat ride. The date was interrupted when the pair spotted a body dressed in white on the lake's edge. Just before their horrible discovery, Aoife was jolted into action by screams coming from Lori Silvertail's room. Aoife arrived on the scene just in time to save Tony's uncle from a spell that was causing his lungs to fill with water. With the immediate danger past, the group noticed a parting message that had been scratched into the wall. And that's what happened. So now, here's the show.
Gather round, travelers, to hear our tale. Something is stalking Lily Hall. With strange powers at beck and call, now we'll hear who brought it here, and past mistakes become clear. Stay afloat as we head into favor, episode 30, Drowned Sorrows.
Everybody, welcome back. It's another episode of Venture Maidens. And not only is it just another episode, it's our Dirty 30. Yay! This is episode 30. Oh my God, we've made it. We're at the fun, flirty, sexy age of 30, which is great and very timely. Yeah, we're mature. We've got our shit together, but we're still having like a ton of fun. Amazing. How are you all feeling? 30 episodes.
Ooh, I'm feeling, yeah, definitely fallen into the role, feeling mature, feeling like level-headed and like ready to really to dive into stuff.
Yeah, I feel like you all are like getting a handle on things in a lot of ways, and this is kind of like a turning point. You know, y'all were like new to the world and babies before this, but now you here you are solving mysteries, fighting Fae in the mortal plane. It's gonna be great. Cool. Well, shit. Let's go ahead and get into it, because I'm very excited. So, hey, everybody. My name is Celeste Konowich, and tonight I will be your dungeon master.
Hello, I'm Katie, and I'm going to be playing Luveri Sath, your drow rogue.
Hello, I'm Nassim Etemad, and I'm playing your half-orc fighter, Fitonia Silvertail.
And I'm Sage, and I am your beloved bard, Aoife Flannery.
Yes! So for those of you who don't know or are new here, welcome. This is a Dungeons & Dragons actual play 5th edition podcast set in the world, a setting established in the Venture Maidens campaign guide, known as The Plains. We'll say this is a very adult-themed stream. We keep just like a general body horror content warning up for, you know, graphic fantasy violence and all that nonsense. This episode, we have some specific content warnings, including drowning, suffocation, and like intense grief, especially family-based tragedy. If those are themes that you don't feel up to handle, this may not be the episode for you to watch or listen to. But with that out of the way, oh my gosh. So we are in the middle of a mystery. So last episode, we met a lot of people and we started to get some clues about something that is happening here. So before we, you know, pick up on the action, the very last thing that had happened, you know, in the middle of this date, you know, Lou and Cassie had been in this stupid, like, swan paddle boat heading out, you know, to 3 a.m. at this point on a moonlit night towards the on the big, like, family, like, artificial lake that they have here, which has given Lily Hall its name. And there's, like, a little hideaway island with a cute, like, lake cabin atop it that you were heading out towards. And as you had been making your way there, discussing some intimate details of Lou's life and relationship history, Cassie had, spotted something on the shore. And Lou very quickly, you know, with your amazing vision, had been able to take a look as well and see, there is a young woman lying there. Apparently, like, in a seeping, like, wet, just nightgown, collapsed on the shore. You're not sure. You're probably about 30 feet away or so from that shoreline there. So you're not sure if she's, like, dead or sleeping or what, but she is not moving. She's face down on the shore.
So paddle as close as they can, and then Lou is going to jump out of the boat and run over to her and check for pulse, breath, all that.
You, like, hop out of the boat and do the, you know, the sludging over thing where you're stepping through water and, like, climbing up the shore, and Cassie is scrambling out of the boat, you know, behind you. So you run over and you see, her lying face down there. And as you had seen before, this is a young Eldrin woman who looks an awful lot like Ariadne, that woman that you interviewed before. And though you haven't seen Reyna, it's pretty safe to assume that this may be her. So as you flip her over, you can see, you confirm the fact she is absolutely not dressed to be outside. She's in that, like, long white nightgown. She is out cold, so her eyes are completely closed. But you can see that her chest is rising and falling. So she is not dead. And her hair is sopping wet, too. Almost like she, swim here. And Cassie runs up behind you, is like, how is she?
She's breathing.
Good. And looking at her, too, why don't you go ahead and give me that medicine check as you're kind of looking her over.
Yes, that is an 18.
You get down there looking for, you know, life signs. So, there is the chest moving and falling. You can put your ear up to her chest. You don't hear any, like, obstruction or anything. So there's no, like, water in her lungs. She seems fine. And you also look her over, too. There doesn't appear to be any kind of injury, no, like, head wound or anything that might indicate why she is passed out here. She is very, very cold, obviously. The night is cold and she is wet. So you feel like she's probably going to be in trouble if you don't get her warm and dry soon. But there's no visible trauma you can see.
Yeah, if she's not responding to, like, light shakes, you know, saying her name, because I figured that's who she is at this point, then I guess I'm going to look for that cabin that we had originally been coming to go see and see if it's anywhere near that we could take her over there and get her inside.
Yeah, so now that you're looking at the island here, it's a very cute little island. It's not very large. I mean, what you had to climb over was that rocky, kind of sandy shoreline made up here. So you see on, you know, both, like, most sides of this island, they are these, like, jagged kind of piles of rocks. But you have landed on one of these little sandy patches. There are a couple, like, a very small dock that has been tied off here, so you could tie the paddle boat off. And from this little beachy spot, there is a pathway that winds up through these, like, ornamental kind of tiered layers of trees and flourishing plants, all very well manicured and decorated. Less than a 10-minute walk up, you would reach, like, the center area of the island, and you can just make out, like, the edges of some kind of white and golden domed structure.
Yeah, we will look at Cassie and be like, she wanna grab her feet and we can try to get her up to where it's warm?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, and she, you know, kind of struggles a bit, but helps you.
Neither of us are very strong, I think.
Yeah, she doesn't look like the strongest lady in the world, but, you know, she's tall and, you know, you're tall, so it's fine. Reyna's butt is maybe a little close to the ground as you're, like, you know, navigating up these twisting ways. But you do eventually, up the winding path, see this structure. And it does look almost like a gazebo as opposed to an actual cabin, but it is closed in here. You can see lovely painted, like, white shutters and a door with, like, lots of little flowers painted on it, and it's cute, ridiculously cute. Everything is closed up, like, maybe people haven't been in here in some time.
I will gently set my half down and try the door.
Mm-hmm. The door is unlocked.
Don't have to get the lock picks out just yet, day one. Yeah, I'll go ahead and open the door and do a quick peek inside. And as long as I don't see any creepy movement, we'll go on in.
No, you look inside and it's cute. It looks like it's kind of a studio apartment style layout in here. So you see one of those nice, beautiful, like four-poster beds in one corner, like a little door that leads off to, you know, a lavatory area. But otherwise, it's like really kitschy, cute, like tables and chairs and yeah, what you would expect from a very like high-end, glampy cabin.
All right, take her over to the bed and get her tucked in for now so she gets warm.
Yeah. And like a quick search of the room too. You know, there is a wardrobe and there are some of those nice like fluffy robes and stuff that you can like, you know, throw her into one of those. And so it's packed. It's got the nice little soaps and like chocolates and shit. Very like Airbnb, fantasy Airbnb.
Oh my God. Why didn't we get to stay here?
What the hell? Well, apparently it's just open to anyone.
Yeah.
Whatever. Yeah. So you get her all tucked in and, the minute she is like warm and stuff, her temperature, her skin starts to return to a normal temperature and she seems to be out of like any kind of immediate danger. And Cassie looks at you and is like, this is not how I expected this evening to go, but at least she's alive.
Yeah.
I guess.
It could have been a worse date. That's a good way to look at it.
Yeah. Always true. Yes.
I definitely want to return to our conversation at some point, but I feel like maybe now.
Not the time. Yeah. What is she doing out here? It's wearing that.
Exactly. It's not like she decided to come out here. She's wearing her nightgown. She's like a rich lady. They don't do that. They got an outfit for everything.
Yeah. Okay. Well, do you want to stay with her or should I stay with her? And we should probably get like a doctor out here, I guess, or her parents or something.
Yeah, I can go. You know, I'd better meet up with the girls and tell them what we found here. And she'll take like the earpiece that she took and give it to Cassie. And she's like, I got an extra one of these earpieces from the event coordinator. So you can scream into it if something happens and we'll come. Okay.
Ooh, presents on the first date. That's very nice.
I'm a lot of things, but I treat my ladies well, so next time, it'll be better and more fun than this, I hope.
Yeah. Well, go head back and I'll watch over her. No problem.
Okay. Well, thank you for a lovely paddle boat time. It was the most I've enjoyed a boat until the end. So I'm gonna
short and sweet. Yeah.
Yep. Okay. Bye.
Okay.
And Lou's just gonna
Try and do a paddle boat by yourself.
Yeah,
it's gonna be super fun.
Literally straddling between them to get a foot on each side. This seemed like a good idea at the time.
Damn.
Yeah. So she will head back over across the lake to try to get some help for Rena.
All right. So yeah, you start awkwardly heading back across the water, doing your best. And we're going to go ahead and jump over to the scene with Aoife and Tony. So when last we left off, Aoife, you had just basically saved Lori's life by using that lesser restoration and like getting it to the point where he coughed out all this water that was seemingly coming from nowhere. And just as he had kind of stabilized, that was when, Tony, you were able to arrive on the scene. And you had seen all of that, the weird, like, the water that had been coursing, like, down the walls and the floor had started to dry up, as if exposed to, like, a heat lamp, just all of a sudden is gone. So there's no water left in the room. Your uncle is no longer in immediate danger. But in those last moments, you had tried to ask him, like, what's happening? Did you see anything? And he had, like, gone pale and terrified as he looked across, you know, in his four-poster bed, written on the wall, "See me," those two words scratched in to the wallpaper. So here you are, and your uncle is still he's coughing and taking things in, and he is so pale. You've never seen him show a lot of emotion in general, but seeing him this frightened, and it's very uncomfortable, Tony. You've never seen him like this.
Are the windows in his room open or closed?
They're closed.
Are you okay? Does anything else feel wrong, feel hurt, feel damaged in any way?
No, I'm fine. Thanks to you. He looks at you, Aoife. Thank you.
Tony turns to you as well and says thank you.
I'm glad I got here when I did.
Me too. I don't know what that, did you see anything? I've never felt anything like that.
I mean, I ran in here as soon as I heard you. I heard the maid scream when she saw the water coming up from under the door. But even with my spell to see invisibility and to see into beyond the veil on, I don't see anything in this room. And, you know, she takes a quick glance around, especially looking at the see me. And I'm assuming she sees nothing, no trace of anything.
Yeah, just the words. Like, that's the only thing left. Right? Otherwise, there's no trace. There's not even, like, water. Like, whatever water he was coughing out, it's totally gone.
It's so peculiar because, I mean, if it were a matter as simple as a ghost, I'd be able to see it with this sight, but there's nothing.
Uncle, do you remember anything from your dreams? Did you have any dreams tonight?
Yeah, I, just nightmares. It all manner of horrible nightmares. It just, and then a feeling like I was choking, like I couldn't breathe. And then, of course, I woke up and I was the water, and I don't know where it was coming from. And just the pain and the feeling, I felt so heavy. I just couldn't breathe.
Like something was sitting on your chest, or like something was pulling you down?
Yes, like something, like, just like that. Like something was sitting on me. And you can see his eyes are also kind of working, like he's struggling to remember something, almost just out of reach.
Keep thinking about it. Keep reliving it. Keep seeing it.
I think, I don't know if this was the nightmare, if it was real, but right before I woke up, I thought I saw a woman. Not a woman, something. It had big glowing eyes and long black hair, and it was only for a second, and I'm not sure if it was real.
Did you have any kind of feeling of familiarity when you saw this figure? Did it frighten you? Did you feel anything?
Yes, it was. It was horrible. It like I said, I like woman, but not really. It was monstrous.
Everyone here seems to be so in support of Enzo and Reyna getting married, but I mean, do you think that anyone would have anything to gain from them not getting married?
No, both of them, Enzo, Reyna, they're both good people, and as far as the Olyanas are concerned, if I had to pick an Eldrin family that was the most agreeable, it would be them. I've worked with them, I've known them for a very long time, all of them, and they're all good people. I don't understand why any of this is happening, and he seems to be getting very agitated.
Can you tell us, I mean, is there someone here who's good with magic who can put some protections on your room so that you can actually manage to get some sleep tonight? That is, if you even want to go back to bed, I understand, if you don't want to.
I mean, I guess if that's why you're here, you probably know more about this than I do. I don't know any of this. Like, what? And it's at this point, too, that you hear kind of a knock outside. And the door was left open from you, like, storming in here. But for the first time, you know, as that knock draws your attention, you can start to hear some, like, chattering of voices, like, worried voices out in the hall. Sten kind of pokes his head into the room they hear, and he walks in, surveys things, and kind of closes the door behind him. Is everyone all right?
For the most part, yes. My uncle seems to have been attacked by whatever entity is causing all these troubles around this wedding, and they attempted to drown him. There was water coming out of the room, out of the walls, out of his lungs.
I mean, this is by far the worst. Nothing like this has happened so far. I've done what I can to calm the situation. I'm encouraging people to go back to bed again. We don't want this getting out until we know what we're dealing with. If there's any way we can chase down some clues or something on this, I can watch over him in the meantime. But maybe if you take this to Cassie, this might give her a better idea of what we're doing with.
Out of character, how many more days are left until the wedding ceremony?
So you will have one more, like, day, one more night, and then on the dawn of that third day is when the festival and the wedding is supposed to be happening. So you have one more full day and evening before you have to get this solved, or this wedding may not happen on the dawn of day three.
Did I just call him my uncle to Sten?
You know, you did, and he didn't seem fazed by it. There is a pretty strong family resemblance, and he is a private investigator, retired detective. But he didn't give you any grief about it. So it's like maybe he figured it out early, and he just hasn't pressed the issue.
Yeah, we'll not bring that up again. We'll just pretend like it didn't happen.
Maybe he was thinking about something else. Maybe he didn't hear it. You don't know.
Is the rest of the household unaffected? Have they been checked on?
Nobody else seems to have experienced anything this evening. Obviously, the scream woke some people, but I've written it off as just a bad dream. The chambermaid is pretty shaken up, but I've done my best to convince her it would probably be best if this story didn't leave the house. Again, the last thing we need is people panicking.
I mean, yeah, it doesn't seem like any of the other people are really the ones at risk here anyway. It's very much directed towards
your family, it seems. Enzo seems to have been the target for the last couple of nights, but you were watching him, right? And he looks at you, Aoife.
I was, and I didn't see anything. I think, you know, getting closer to the actual holiday and ceremony and everything, she, or whoever's behind this, whatever creature's behind this, I feel like must be getting closer to their true target, is my guess, at any rate.
Perhaps. He kind of looks back, like, over his shoulder, you know, he's talking to three of you, and your uncle is, like, sitting there kind of against the wall, just, like, taking deep breaths, recovering. Perhaps this isn't the best place.
Let's go get Lou and see if her and Cassie have uncovered anything and see if we can knock our heads together.
Do you want me to stay here and watch over him? There's only a few more hours until dawn. For the most part, it seems like most of whatever this is happens at night.
I suspect that, I mean, hearing that it's just been Enzo, I suspect it's probably maybe just one attack for night, but yeah, I mean, I suppose better to be safe than sorry.
Well, it seems like you're doing fine, as you are, so I will stay here and just watch over him and make sure things here quiet down. But you go and do what you have to do, and you know where to find me if you need me.
I'll be right back. I'm going to actually make a tea for him, something just to help him get some shut-eye and feel a little bit more at peace.
All right, I'll head out and see if I can spot Lou and Cassie and flag them down. We'll meet back at our tent.
I'll be there soon. Yeah, Tony's going to go down to the kitchen in this house and try and gather up all the spices out of her herbalism kit and whatever's in the kitchen that she doesn't have, and wants to focus on creating a tea that will help him in any dream state to be more lucid, be a little bit more aware, so that should anything happen, hopefully he can remember it or control it in some way to not be so terrifying. That is the intention behind this tea.
Cool. Just so you all know, dear viewers, we very recently got copies of the Herbalism Primer Guide, which is a very cool book written by Anna Urbanek, which is like all about magical herbs and properties and shit. And it's very cool. So we're leaning into that a little bit. Do you have any, like, specific plants or herbs in mind for this tea?
It, according to the guide, requires althea, anise, calendula, cinnamon, holly, mugwort, and yarrow. I imagine in a standard kitchen, I'll probably only find, like, three of these. So it'll be like an anise tea with cinnamon, holly, and I think she probably will have a little bit. I don't know what yarrow is. I need to do some research here.
Yarrow is a relatively common ingredient. Holly actually might be something that would be a little harder to get out of season because we're just moving into summer. But I think you can find enough of these ingredients. Luckily, this is a very wealthy home with a very well-stacked pantry and culinary staff. Also, they're preparing for a giant festival with a lot of food. So you can find most of these things. So go ahead and roll. Let's roll a check with your herbalism.
Oh, well, that was a natural 20.
Oh, shit. Okay. Well, damn. So you find so much stuff you have. And what you don't have, maybe in your kit, you can supplement a few things or a few things that are adjacent enough to make a tea that you think, like, this is something, you know, your mother might make.
Sweet. Yeah. I'll return to the room. Give it to my uncle. Drink as much as you like. It's calming. It'll help settle your nerves, at least. And I hope that you have sweet dreams.
Thank you. Really taking after your mother, aren't you?
Of course. I mean, she always took care of all of us the best way.
It's good to have you here, Fatonia. I'm sorry, Tony.
I'm glad I'm here.
Figure this out, okay?
I promise.
By this point, he's like wearing, you know, a dressing gown and sitting by a window and stuff, and he seems to have very little intention of probably ever falling back asleep, but he, you know, sips the tea and is calmed, and Sten has like taken a place, you know, on a parlor chair and is flipping through that newspaper you saw him moving through earlier, filling in something, like maybe doing a crossword.
Mm-hmm. I bid them both good night, and I'll make my way back to our tent.
So, Aoife, you are heading out of there. Are you heading back towards, like, the tent or just, you know, looking for signs of where Cassie and Lou went?
She had suggested that Lou and Cassie go off towards the cabin and the little island to investigate to see if they could see anything that was maybe out of place there because that was the place that Mina died. So she'll head out to the banks of the lake and see if she can try and see them. Or if they, for when they come back, is there like,
hi!
Oh my
god.
Holy
shit! Yeah. You start making your way like out of the, you know, the manor house and heading towards the shore. And it's not long at all before you're kind of startled because out of a dark corner, all of a sudden there's like a flash of movement and like a hand that lands on you. And you see like, oh shit, like Rook there, you know, in her now 16-year-old form. And she's like, what happened? I heard a scream.
Yeah, Aoife flails back, her, like, with her arms flailing. And she's like, God, you scared the piss out of me. All right. I don't know what Lou and Cassie have figured out, if anything. But while I was posted up in Enzo's room, Tony's uncle got attacked by whatever this thing is. And it was an invisible. It wasn't in the ethereal realm. It might not have even been in the room. But it was like it was drowning him. It was awful. It was clearly trying to kill him. He's not dead. I saved him, thankfully.
Really? I mean...
She crosses her arm and, like, stamps her foot into the ground, like, how dare you?
Right, sorry. Good job. Okay, all right, fine.
I know healing magic. It's the one thing I'm good at.
Yes. Sorry, I'm learning whatever. Oh, okay, fine. So that's fine. Everybody's alive. That's fine.
Indeed, but this thing is getting more and more aggressive. It's just starting off with bad dreams and escalating to drowning, and Mina was drowned. It's all got to be connected.
Okay, fine. That's actually not even why I came here to tell you so, but glad that's going. Who the fuck let a Corellon into our tent? That's what I'm fucking here to ask about.
What? What are you talking about? She said she didn't know anything about Corellons.
She? Who the fuck? What? She's looking at you like...
Wait, who are you talking about? I'm talking about the hot girl that Lou's flirting with, or that's flirting with Lou, more appropriately.
Lou... I'm sorry, Lou... What? And it occurs to you, Rook never met Cassie. Rook has no context for what... Rook has been, like, gone all day. So she's like... Lou, okay. One, super weird coming back. Yeah, I mean, there's somebody's stuff in there. All these fake books and then this. And she pulls out, you see now, she has a big backpack on her that you didn't see because she's still kind of like halfway in the shadows. And she pulls out that like big case that you saw before that Cassie had like stashed under her bed. And she's like, this. What the fuck? We can't trust fucking Corellin. Who let her in? Why? Also, why are we sharing tents with these people? And what's going on?
All right. So here's the deal. Sten, the constable that we got the job from, he hooked us up with Cassie, who he had mentioned in our initial meeting. Cassie is a book-learned fey expert who has never spent time out in the wilds.
Are you sure about that?
Okay, well, you know, not really, but I asked her directly, do you ever deal with the Corellins? And she said no.
Oh, because Corellins don't lie, right?
She shrugs like, how am I supposed to know this?
What? I mean, look at this. And she flips over the case and like there's like a little, she's like feverishly pointing at like a little inscription that like kind of looks like a bell symbol that's been engraved in there.
Did you open it?
No. What if it's trapped or some stupid... You open it! And she, like, kind of shoves it at you.
She puts her little fist on her hip, and she takes it from her, and she puts it on the ground, and she very annoyingly opens the case.
Yeah, and you do, and Rook, like, backs up visibly as you do so. And as you look inside, you see the case opens up, and it is indeed an instrument case. And inside you see like a beautiful 7-string lyre in there. And it's again, like, yeah, the curved silver with these patterns of like flowers and birds and just a freaking gorgeous instrument.
And Aoife puts her hand out to present like, are you happy? Look, it's not bells.
I don't think they have to use just bells. I think some have other instruments. And then why would there be a bell symbol on it? And then also, why does an Eldrin know so much about Fey? Huh?
Because Fey don't like bells, first of all. Everyone knows that. And secondly, I don't fucking know! But anyway, she's a researcher, alright? I knew you wouldn't like her. And she just, like, she has her hands on her temple, and she's just, like, trying so hard to figure out what she could possibly say that's gonna get through. And she's like, alright, look. She's a researcher. I don't know why she's really into Fae. I don't really give a shite. But quite personally, she's here to solve us whatever the fuck's happening here. So she was in a Jason tent. I told her to move into our tent because it's going to be a basis of operations. And we need to figure out what the fuck is going on if we're going to save anyone here. So, and she just like, just motions like, I don't know what you want from me.
And she's looking at you, totally kind of mirroring your like, yeah, she's like, I don't know either, and I'm frustrated about it. You're both 16 and angry, like, standing there in the street. And she's like, fine, okay, but I think we should probably just not, like, put all of our faith and trust in this Cassie is all I'm saying here.
Oh, no, for sure. I just hope that she knows something for how we can kill it and what it is. But, I mean, we're...
Stuff that Corellin would probably know, huh?
I mean, probably, but Whistler's a fucking dumbass. I don't think he would know either. So if she knows something, at least we can exploit that, right? And we're only doing this for a couple of days until we figure out and then... Maybe we go separate ways. Like, maybe we never have to see her again. Just don't share personal details like you would anyway, but we won't either.
Fine. Okay. All I'm saying is I am not going to sleep where she's sleeping, is all I'm saying.
I'm sure you could take her tent.
Fine. And she goes over and she kind of like kicks closed the lid of the harp and she's like, I guess I'll just... put this back.
Don't let her catch you. I'll stall. She yells as like Rook is stuffing away with the case.
And so she picks up the case and she's like, okay, fine. I'll go put it back. But where is everyone else? Are we meeting in the tent later or what? And also you should probably tell them that this Cassie may or may not be extremely suspicious.
All right, I'll try to slip it to them if I can get them away from her. I'll make it happen. We're meeting back in the tent so we can have a discussion thing.
I'll wait there. I'll go through the rest of her stuff just to make sure.
She shrugs. All right, sure.
Good. And she, like, disappears off into the shadows, like, clutching the instrument case.
Real talk, though, I definitely vibe with Rook because I'm a nosy bitch and I will go through your medicine cabinet.
Oh, yeah, Rook is here. She's like, nope, you sleeping in our house? All right. Full scan, everything on your person, every dirty secret I can learn. This smells weird. Why? Why do you smell so weird? Why do you have 3 deodorants? Huh? What's that about? Like, that kind of...
I like a value, okay?
Listen, I have a Costco membership. I don't know what to tell you.
So after that exchange...
So that happens. Yeah. So after that, Aoife, you can keep moving along your course, and I think you probably run into Lou about this point.
Yeah, as soon as she sees them within shouting distance in the little paddle boat, she's like, oh my god, Lou, Cassie, are you right?
So Cassie isn't there. It appears to be just Lou.
Oh,
like,
god, she's even
leaning over.
She's freaking out.
Lou's just like, fuck, I was hoping nobody would see me like this. Just like
with your hands on one pedal and your feet on the other. Oh, yeah.
Oh, my god. And she, like, finally, like, takes a minute, but gets back to the stupid little dock, and she scrambles out of the boat, and she, like, puts her hands on her thighs and, like, bends over, puts her finger out, like, give me a second. Before you say anything, yes, he's fine. I don't know about that date, but more importantly, sorry. Oh, Raina was just, like, stranded, like, passed out on the sand when we, oh my god, when we got there. And she's alive, but she wouldn't wake up. So we took her back to the cottage and then got her warmed up. And Cassie's with her now. Oh my god, I gotta get in shape. And we gotta send, like, a doctor or something. So, but everyone's alive. I gave Cassie the earpiece.
And Aoife's just standing there with mouth agape, just shocked. And she takes a minute she kind of shakes her face a little bit to remember what the fuck she was going to say. And she says, oh my god, Tony's uncle, Lori, he was attacked by whatever the creature was. It tried to drown him, like, in his bed. Water was coming out of the walls and coming through the door. It was positively nightmarish. But he's fine. He's fine. And Sten's staying outside his door. But this is huge. I mean, we need to get Cassie together because maybe she knows something.
I think that's a great idea. Fully with you. Let's not do the paddle boat again. I never want to see it ever again. We should probably get Sten or something to, like, get a doctor or what. I don't know. I don't know what's wrong with her. But, like, she clearly didn't mean to be there. She was in her, like, nighty gown. So, you don't let anyone see you in your nighty gown.
So weird. Like, it's just like what happened to her sister out there on the night.
Well, I mean, I don't know. You're the magic one. This is just all magic-y. And We just need to find some order here for a second. Let's get that doctor. And Tony's uncle, he's all settled.
He's all settled. Tony's getting him some tea so he can be more at ease and be warded in his dreams, hopefully from whatever attacked him. And I said that we'd all meet back in the tent. So let's go there, rendezvous. We'll get Rook, get suited up for maybe trying to hunt this thing out, find a doctor. And I knew this would happen, but Rook is just insanely suspicious about Cassie.
Oh my god.
She thinks she's a Corellan, even though I specifically asked Cassie and she said she had never worked with the Corellans because that's, like, a whole different bag.
Well, that's totally ridiculous anyway, because my mom said that all the Corellans went back to Ashtar.
Right? So anyway, just Rook's being a little oversensitive and is going through all of Cassie's stuff in our room. That's a whole situation. But, I mean,
of course Roke would have beef with the one person who asked me on a fucking date in 10 goddamn years.
Tifa just kind of, like, nods in commiseration.
So also probably, Tony, you would probably show up kind of around this, you see, you know, them exchanging things here too, so.
Tony struts up to the tent, sees them, I don't know, gabbing about something. I'll just interject with, Uncle Laurie's doing better, he's got his tea, Sten is there with him, so. What happened with you tonight, Lou? What's, what happened on your little love boat excursion?
Love boat.
And you can just share that story again. Yeah, you've gotten really good at telling it. Yeah. So, Tony, you can be caught up all to speed. I don't know, but Aoife, do you mention the Rook's behavior or?
100%. Yeah, we'll just info dump on the both of them. Make sure everyone's caught up.
I can't deal with both of these things at one time. And I'm trying not to be confrontational, because I get stabby when I'm confrontational with Rook. So I'm just going to table that, and we can continue to use Cassie as a resource. It doesn't seem like we're going to get any closer until this is figured out anyway, at which point we can have a conversation before anything else. Not that anything happened there. Happens there. So let's get that doctor and have them send out a boat so they can get Cassie back. Let's go get in there, talk to Rook a little bit before Cassie shows up, because she's either not going to want to be in there, or we need to tell her to chill for like a minute till we get this contract done.
Yeah, I mean, it's no surprise. Obviously, we all thought Rook would do this, but it's okay, I think, if she wants to be a little skeptical, to think that's a little healthy. As long as she doesn't stop us from doing what we need to do, that's all that matters. I don't see that happening personally.
At the end of the day, we know no matter what happens, she's going to be out there with her crossbow shooting at things with us, because that is her joy. So,
yeah. Rook cannot like it as much as she wants, but for better or worse, this is our situation right now.
Okay, doctor, boat, I'll go.
Yeah, so you can, we can definitely, you know, hand wave this too. Like, you can run up and, you know, talk to Sten. He can make sure that he goes and gets the family physician and it's all taken care of and it's discreet and stuff and blah, blah, blah. So you can leave that to him and he will make sure that both Cassie and Raina get brought back. Raina gets into bed and, like, in a good situation and she's taken care of. Those events all happen very quickly over the next hour or so. So yeah, if you all want to meet up and talk with Rook before Cassie shows up, we can jump to that, or we can start when Cassie appears. So whatever scene you want to do next.
Probably talk to Rook to clear the air first. You guys agree?
I really am not interested in clearing air with Rook anymore. I'm just like, Rook will do what Rook wants to do, and then we'll continue doing our job as well. So Tony will just be there for moral support. It's like, okay.
Okay.
I'm here.
Yeah, so you show back up and, you know, Rook is at this point, you know, there's nothing out of place in the room. It looks like whatever investigation she's done, she has already done and has packed away. And she's sort of sitting on her cot looking like trying to look like casual, which is just very not great. She's sitting there like with her hands in her lap, and kind of when you all come in, she like stands up a little bit and then sort of sits back down as like, oh, it's just you guys. Okay.
Hi, Rook. How have things been during this hectic day for you? Did you find out anything interesting, or you just been...
Yeah, a few things. Did Aoife talk to you?
Yep, Aoife talked to us, and I think that for now, we gotta get the job done. But I understand your concern.
Okay, well, as long as everybody's on that page. I did actually also, I was kind of talking to people, like normal people. Today, not all of that. And she like waves a hand towards the thing. And yeah, and I guess actually there have been some weird things going on with more people than just the rich people. Shocker, right? Apparently there have been like several dudes that I talked to who've also had like bad dreams and woken up and been like weirdly tired and whatever. But of course, because they're like groomsmen and stable people and hunters and whatever, nobody's fucking talking about that. So I talked to at least four other, and they're all guys, and they're, you know, and they're all, they all slept alone, one. So like none of them had a, like a wife or whatever, or someone there with them. And this happened to them. So
no one was with them physically, but did come any kind of,
like, when this happened, so nobody could, like...
Yeah, but I mean, like, did you happen to go into their, like, romantic situation with any of them? Or any of them pursuing someone?
Oh, yeah, well, I asked them, like, if anybody saw it or whatever, and they said no. So nobody was, like, sleeping with them. And I mean, they're all, like...
Like, I mean, are they dating someone? Are they, like, single? There's no one in the picture? Or are they, like, they are with someone, they just weren't with them physically? I'm curious about the relationship status of these victims.
Oh, I mean, I guess... And she looks and she's, like, ugh, trying to do, like, human calculations. Like, oh, okay, Eldrin, normal. I guess they were all kind of young and honestly sort of, like, awkward dudes, I guess. So maybe, like, none of them were, like, married or anything.
Okay. I mean, yeah, I mean, really, I'm just trying to look for similarities or differences.
At least that means that it's not specifically just your family. So that's good, I guess.
Well, I mean, none of them, you know, were, like, magically drowning or whatever. So I think it's pretty safe to assume that there's something up with your family. And it does seem like Enzo is the only one who's been through this, like, multiple times. So these were all, like, kind of one-off.
Right. There seems to be, like, an area of effect, even though it's targeted at one person.
Yeah. I mean, they didn't look nearly as shitty as your cousin. Sorry. Mm-hmm. But, like, they didn't, so.
Tony, is your uncle married?
So he was married a long time ago, but his wife died when Enzo was, like, 10? Like, a... He's been a widower for a while.
It's interesting that this creature is going after unmarried men, for sure.
Yeah. Lou takes out her notepad and starts writing that down.
Anyone good at history checks?
What's your question? We might be able to spin it to some other skill.
I'm just thinking if, like, any of us can recall or maybe have heard of similar attacks or, like, folklore about attacking single men.
Yeah, if you want to do a history, like maybe an like recent empire history or something of that nature.
Well, I'm not great at history is the thing.
I'm okay at it.
I mean, I could just do it anyway, but
I have plus two.
I'm gonna do it. Well, I got 15.
Okay, 15. There's certainly nothing like this in the history of like the Shifting Plains or in, you know, your tribe or the tribes around you that you can recall. But I mean, all kinds of weird shit happens in Eldrin society. And, you know, like any burgeoning society, there, of course, have been like serial murders and crime sprees, things of that nature. So maybe like something like a sensational string of like unsolved murders might come to mind. And there are certainly creatures in this world that prey on especially unmarried people, like virgins is a big thing, like, you know, some monsters or like fae maybe even might be like really attracted to that kind of victim type. There are things like sirens that maybe prey specifically on like that kind of that attraction, or like you can like succubi or incubi are a type of like demon that preys on, like, attracting their victims and, like, stealing the life from them through, like, physical contact. So there's certainly a precedent for, like, supernatural stuff or more mundane things. Like, it seems very clear that this is, like, a targeting profile thing. You feel very secure in seeing that that pattern is probably really important to what is happening.
Now that we've cleared the air a bit with Rook, definitely get Cassie's mind in on this and relay what our sort of theories and what we've learned to her.
Yeah, and Rook will say, she's like, I'm fine. Like, I'm fine. I mean, I'm just going to be watching her, like, just in case. But if she wants to play ignorant, that's fine. Get what we need.
Fantastic.
That's her stance. Perfect. She's not here to, like, throw a wrench in the plan. She's just, like, warning everybody that she has this suspicion.
All right.
No. Yeah, no. Yeah.
Yeah, so you want Cassie to come and meet up with you all? Okay, yeah, so you rendezvous, and, you know, Cassie basically helped see Reyna go and get settled, and so you hear eventually. It's at this point where, like, you can see, you know, first rays of dawn kind of creeping up over the hills as you have had a very long night, action-packed night. And so in that pre-dawn, you know, you hear the kind of weird knocking on the outside, and Cassie sticks her face in, you know, under the flap looking just haggard and tired. Okay, so good news, Reyna is fine. She's sleeping now, but she did wake up. She seemed really confused about where she was and didn't seem to have any recollection of how she got there, but the doctor said she's fine. At a glance, anyway, he's doing more tests, but, oh, hey! She kind of waves at Rook, who's sort of haunting a corner there. She's like, oh, you must be Rook. And Rook nods. I'm Cassie. Nice to meet you. And Rook says, uh-huh. Kind of nods and, like, narrows her eyes. She's like, I heard that you were an interesting person, and I'm looking forward to getting to know you more. I'll get it out of you. He kind of laughs, and Rook says, we're just here to do a job, so if we could really focus on that, I would really prefer that. And Cassie's like, cool. And then looks at the rest of you and is like, all right.
Glad you got back okay. Let's move forward in what we found out. And then I think we all need to fucking sleep for a little bit.
Yeah, I guess how do we want to do this? You all have been seeing stuff, and basically at this point there's so many things that it could be, anything you have to give me, like anything you've observed or anything, if you could list it out like that, that's all good stuff that will help me circle in on what exactly this is. So, out of game, kind of what we're doing here as this, like, mystery stage. So I have a list of, like, facts that are helpful and important about identifying this creature. So clues that you've learned so far, this could be things the monster has done, the circumstances, like anything you might have noticed. And if we get a certain number of these, Cassie will be able to successfully identify what this creature is, and you will be able to get more information. So that's kind of the mechanic we're working with here. So if you want to all put your heads together for a second and bounce around and pull out what you think are the critical details about identifying this creature. We'll do that. See if we can identify it.
Neat, neat, neat.
Cassie kind of lays out a notebook and has several of her tomes sort of around her. She gets herself situated, readies like a quill. It's like, all right, what do we know?
Okay. Lou takes out her own little notebook and flips through back a couple pages.
Cassie goes, aw. Like, makes it cute, like, when you pull out your own notebook.
Lou turns bright red and clears her throat. So, in general, there just seems to be a very calm attitude about the wedding happening, even though there's some really dark circumstances just 1 year prior with his previous fiance and Reyna's sister Mina dying by drowning, which is strange anyway, because she was somebody who was good at swimming having grown up here.
Okay, so some kind of like you suspect like a charm effect maybe, or something manipulating the emotions of these people?
Could be. I mean, Enzo himself said that it doesn't feel like he should feel this happy.
Considering they would normally be doing something to celebrate the memory just a year later, instead they seem to be erasing it with this wedding.
And nobody seems to be particularly alarmed about the strange mishaps that are happening.
Yeah, I wonder if that's the creature or if that's just Eldrin society.
Very well could be.
Okay, what else?
Okay, what happened when we were on the island, we'll go over like the whole situation that happened with Tony's uncle, that he had been drowning, like water coming out of his mouth, which is once again similar to how Mina died. And whatever entity was doing this scratched out "see me" on the wall.
So we think it's trying to be seen. It's trying to make somebody see it. Yeah, what?
Seems like a cry for help.
But also, Aoife had a see invisibility and would have been able to see it if it had been in a different plane as well, and did not see it in Enzo's room or when she ran into Tony's uncle's room either.
Okay, so it can travel unseen, but it's not invisible?
It seems it's extending its abilities beyond where it physically is, and it's not doing it from the ethereal plane, so probably not a ghost or ghost-like thing, and isn't specifically invisible.
But the other weird thing, too, is that her uncle Lori said that he has a vague memory right before he woke up of seeing a woman with big glowing eyes and long black hair, over him, like pressing on his chest.
And that looked particularly monstrous and not, it looked vaguely feminine. And Enzo had also mentioned that he had felt this sort of pressure on his chest.
And this is when they were sleeping.
Having the nightmares.
Oh, actually, it's weird that you kind of say that about the rooms and stuff. I totally just thought of this. When we went to drop off Reyna in her bedroom, the door was locked from the inside. They had to go and get someone to open it.
Was there anything strange about the room when they did enter?
No, I mean, it looked totally normal, but yeah, the windows were locked and the door was locked from the inside. So yeah, so how did she get out?
So some sort of teleportation, I guess, in some way. Because if everything was locked, including the window, then...
So the thing teleported Reyna.
I have a feeling this thing is traveling through dreams. So it must have made her... I don't know if you guys took any time to interrogate her or while you were returning her, but we should definitely find out if she remembers anything. Because if it is traveling through dreams, it could have forced her up and out of bed, locked the door before closing it behind her. I mean... That's the only thing.
With the weird mist that they've been seeing, maybe it's turning people into mist so it can bring them out of the room? So that way she could get through the cracks of a closed window or a door, perhaps?
I mean, that does explain how it could travel, I guess, unseen. Okay, what else?
Enzo seems to be... There are other people on the premises around the area who have been experiencing these scary nightmares that they wake up from and feeling that same sense of drainedness and that pressure on their chest. But Enzo is the only one who continuously has this happen to him again and again. All these men seem to be single men.
Until tonight, when Enzo wasn't attacked.
Correct. He's the only one who's had it happen to him several times when we were in the room with him. Then he went after Lori, or it went after Lori.
And all of these men are single, unmarried men.
Then, just to get them out of the way, there's the two pieces that we walked into knowing, which is that people had been seeing the mist in the hallways at night. This always seems to happen specifically at night. And that there's weird weather phenomenon going on in the area.
All right, anything else?
Also, it just once again might be an Eldrin thing, but everybody is really rushed to get this wedding done by Oxia, which is, strangely enough, like I said, 1 year specifically away from when Mina died.
Okay, so there's maybe an important date or triggering event that has this creature upset.
I'm thinking that since it's been almost a year to the day when Mina died, that perhaps some deal was forged that the two families should be conjoined within, a year and a day sort of situation. And maybe someone prevented that from happening when they killed Mina. And then, they're rushing to get these two kids wed because the deadline's coming up for them to meet this stipulation on the deal, perhaps. That's my thoughts.
It definitely seems like the marriage is probably some kind of triggering event for this thing.
Question out of game. Do we know, is there like a timing coincidence between Oxia and that date that Hecate wanted the Enigma code by like a certain date, a certain moon, I remember? Is there any correlation between these dates?
The last full moon that happened, yeah, about 3 weeks ago or so before that like action happened, that was the last full moon. Another one hasn't come up yet. You can, as players, sort of put together all the reports of the Corellans meeting in Ashtar seem to line up around that full moon. All of the sharp increase in Fey activity across the Empire seems to have started happening around that full moon. It's safe to say there was probably some correlation that happened there. But Oxia specifically doesn't fall on the night of a full moon or anything.
Okay. I think this must be at least some sort of use, given that we have done some deal with the Fey recently.
Rook makes a kind of sound, like from behind you. And Cassie goes, sorry, what was that, Rook? Nothing. Just me being quiet over here. Just not oversharing over here. You know, in my corner. And Cassie's like, okay. I'm sorry, what were you saying?
I know a Fey. She's looking at Rook while she says this. I know there's a Fey who has their hands on a powerful book and wanted this book to, we don't know what. We don't know why she wanted it, but she wanted it before the next full moon. And since she had this book, we know that the full moon's passing brought along an increase in Fey activity. We also know that all the Corellans seem to have returned to Ashtar since then or by then. And an increase in Fey strangeness since that time.
And Cassie, you know, chews on the end of her quill. Okay, well, I mean, I think it's pretty undeniable to say that, yeah, things have gotten really dicey in the last month or so. Do you think that's relevant to this investigation?
Could be.
I don't know since Oxia isn't on a full moon, I don't think that the full moon is going to trigger anything, because it seems like Oxia is more important than that right now, but I think maybe the start of it.
I don't know if it's connected to Oxia. I just think something maybe got its power or got its energy from whatever took place on that full moon.
Well, I mean, certainly the Empire, we are seeing more Fey sightings than we have in decades, I guess. I mean, the Corellans are very strict when it comes to finding Fey, hunting them down, you know, removing any artifacts that might be threatening or anything. It is very concerning that there is a Fey one here, I guess, and then also so close to the capital, and with all of these people, it really doesn't feel great if this is a Fey and something of substantial power enough to change weather and like going after Eldrin High Society. That is definitely not good. So, yeah.
Well, all we can do is try to protect what little people we can in this particular case. And
Okay, yeah. Sorry, yeah. Anything else?
I mean, obviously you were there. Reyna was completely soaked through, so I don't know if she was, like, sleep swimming, which is fucking crazy.
Yeah, I don't know why she would have been.
Yeah. We definitely need to talk to her more and also inspect her room to see if there's any secret passage or anything that she could have gotten out through. But that's for tomorrow. And then in general, I think we've covered it, but that Enzo's symptoms are that he's having those bad dreams. He has the pressure on his chest and he seems to be almost being drained during these, but that's about it.
All right. Well, I've got some good stuff here, so I guess I don't think we have much time to waste. So I'm going to just hit the books and see what I can come up with. So I don't know. Give me a couple hours, maybe get some sleep, and I'll keep at this. And you will do what you need to do.
Long rest.
And Cassie already, you can tell her attention is like drifted away from you and she's already starting to pick up various things. And so she's kind of like half answering you at this point as she's, you know, like hunched over, sitting on the floor in like terrible posture, spreading out papers all around her, starting to get that going. And Rook's like, I'll stay up and just keep watch just in case. How about that, huh?
Sure, Rook.
And Cassie's like, yeah, sure, Rook. She's looking at a flipping through a book.
Sounds good. Well, I guess bedtime. And Lou kind of like grabs her stuff and is like, I'm going to go change in the bathroom area. It like scrambles out the tent.
There's like a sound that comes from Cassie of acknowledgement. Do you all want to take a long rest? And so you all will kind of sleep through the early morning and then you can be active, you know, 10, 11 a.m.
Yeah. After my 4 hours of elfness, Lou will get up and just like quietly leave and like come back with like coffee and food and just like set it down for everybody and just like slowly insert the coffee into Cassie's like eye frame.
Oh, yeah. And she reaches out. She's like, oh, yeah, I think. So you all take a long rest, and I think it has been a very long night, and despite the horrific things you've seen and experienced, it's probably pretty easy to get to sleep after everything that has been happening, or it's been go since you got here, and it's a nice break that you finally get to have. As you said, Lou, you know, after you're done with your 4 hours, you go out and you get some coffee and you kind of put it in front of Cassie, who has been up this entire time. Hasn't really moved from her crouched position other than to like, she lays on her stomach sometimes or twists to the other side, right? Or goes and gets a book. It's a very quiet affair. And everybody else is sleeping other than Rook, who's just been sitting cross-armed in her cot, just kind of watching Cassie this entire time. So Rook nods as you kind of come back into the tent and gives you like a don't worry, we're still good look.
Lou just rolls her eyes but hands Rook a cup of coffee too.
And when you do kind of slide the coffee in front of Cassie and she says, oh, and, you know, and grabs it and then kind of seems to remember where she is and looks up at you and she's like, can I ask you something about this whole thing?
Sure, go for it.
Just out of game for a second, Tony, you have not mentioned that you are related to the Silvertails at this point, right? Or have you in front of Cassie?
No, but when we were talking earlier, I did hear Lou slip out that Lori was my uncle to Cassie.
Oops.
Yeah, so Cassie will be like, and she lowers her voice a little bit because everybody's sleeping in the same space. And she says, I don't really know what's going on with, you know, Tony and everyone, but how much does Tony, is she close to Enzo or this uncle? Do you know?
I think that, like, as she says that, Lou kind of gets an oh shit face if she realized that she had said Tony's uncle. And then she just, like, clears her throat and she's like, oh, she knows.
Sorry, I just, I noticed things. Sorry.
You're fine. I mean, we were trying to keep it on the down low, but I was reading off my paper. Anyway, yeah, I mean, it doesn't, from what I can tell, it doesn't seem like, I mean, Tony loves her family, but doesn't have like a super in-depth relationship with her uncle and her cousin.
Because I have my suspicions about what might be happening, and I don't think it bodes very well for them. So there might be some hard questions incoming.
Like, he's definitely gonna die, or he's a bad person, or what are we looking at here?
Well, I mean, the creature that I'm double checking, but this thing, I think it's here for a very specific reason. And that reason, I don't think it's good. I know this girl, there's a death, and there were some mysterious circumstances, and it seems pretty clear to me that this thing wants revenge, or to punish someone.
You've been up all night. I can only assume that if you're really bringing this to the table, that...
More and more it looks like that's the case, yeah.
Gotcha. I mean, this is something that we'd need to talk to Tony about. I don't really feel comfortable having this conversation on her behalf. This is her...
Of course. I just wanted to, you know, kind of know... I don't know, it just sucks, you know, when the facts don't go the way you want them to.
Yeah. Well, that's life. And ultimately, even if it's not what we want, we can still try to take what's left and make the best of it. So when everyone else finishes sleeping, I guess we can have this conversation.
Yeah, of course, and I'll keep checking. And
can I get you anything else other than coffee? There's still gonna be a little bit here, so
yeah, if I could get like a bagel or something, that'd be great. Still, definitely feeling a little bit of that mead that we had earlier. It's a long, you know, just
let me get you something incredibly greasy. I'll be back.
And she's sitting on the floor, so she kind of, like, taps, you know, pats your calf and sort of smiles up at you, like, so tired, but in the way that makes her eyes scrunch.
Lou just clears her throat again in the, oh no, she's really cute, and I was like, I'll be right back. And just skedaddles out to make the greasiest, like, egg breakfast sandwich. To hit all the hangover help.
All right. Cool. Do we want to go ahead and fast forward to kind of the end of the long rest and sort of lay it all out?
Yeah. Sounds good to me.
Yeah. So you come back, Cassie eats her sandwich, blah, blah, blah. You all wake up, go through your morning stuff, and you can hear at this point too, and Lou, you would have seen it, like, because tomorrow morning now, so less than 24 hours, will be the festival. Like, the gates will be open, people will be arriving. So this is the day that pretty much everyone is showing up, and, like, final setup is being done, so it is packed. The gardens everywhere around the house is just crawling with people, setting up food carts and games and the entertainment. There are rehearsals going on for all the various events that are going to be taking place. You see coordinators around the house, like, setting up, like, the wedding area. There are, you know, the chairs and, like, the stage and all being constructed, and it's chaos. Luckily, there seems to be some kind of enchantment on your tent that keeps the sound out, but the minute you step outside, it's people yelling, like, 6 a.m. sharp, you know, people are just all over the place. So many loud noises, construction sounds, it's complete chaos. So, in the middle of all this, you know, you all come together, get ready, back in the tent, and Cassie has some notes in front of her, kind of circles you all up, and she says, okay. So I put together everything and checked and double checked, and she casts sort of a weird glance at you, Tony, that you'd probably just casually clock. And I'm pretty sure that this is what we're dealing with. And she opens up one of these books and, like, lays something down on the table in front of you all. And you can see it's like a sketch style kind of field notes journal, it seems like, and you see this illustration of this very tall and kind of emaciated female figure with, like, drawn skin, looks almost like undead, and this long stringy hair and these, like, small wings, black feather wings sprouting out of her back, and you see these, like, huge eyes set into her face. And you see that the entry here is titled Mare. M-A-R-E. She says, this creature, based on what we know so far, I think it's a mare, which is interesting. Usually they show up in more like rural communities. In particular, mares for some reason are... Well, the thing is, they're women who basically are... Or the mare kind of possesses... They're born from the spirit of unmarried women who die, usually in some kind of tragic or unfulfilled way. And when that happens, that spirit is kind of transforms into this thing that possesses a living unmarried woman to carry out usually some kind of revenge or get satisfaction for the cause of their death. And I mean, all the signs are there. So essentially their MO, they come and they ride. She does like quote hands victims, usually again, unmarried men, and plagues them, torments them, feeding off of their life energy as part of that vengeance. So I think that's probably what we're dealing with here with the, you know, the dead girl and Mina. So that's what I got.
Wait, what type of creature did she say?
It's a fae. So it's sort of a weird amalgamation between... Because when somebody passes in a way that is violent or unfulfilled or in some way, a very angry spirit turns into this fae. And then one step further, the fae specifically has to possess a living person. And usually they take over at night, transforming whoever they're hidden inside of to enact this vengeance. And of course, they can turn into mist, so they can travel around. So obviously to deal with this thing, we're going to have to find some way to, get it there. So get it to show up, prevent it from leaving. And then the only way to drive a mare out of a living host is to basically force it to change in the sight of others. And then even still, to make it more complicated, after the mare has been separated, the only way to get it to go is to lay it to rest. So to give it whatever promise, whatever vengeance it was here to fulfill.
We have to let it get what it wants?
Yeah. And there are some cases, of course, obviously, it wants direct revenge. And some of these women, though, who turn into these things, it's a simple matter of just exposing what happened to them. Or even, in some cases, proposing marriage to the creature or fulfilling a promise that wasn't kept.
And do you suspect that it's attached itself to Enzo or to Reyna?
If Reyna was out in the water and there was no way out, I gotta assume that it's possessing her.
It only possesses unmarried women. So I think poor Reyna has become the host for this thing. But who it wants vengeance on and why? I mean, clearly this marriage set it off. And if it was Mina, I think it's safe to assume that it's probably has something to do with your family, Tony. She says kind of sheepishly and sort of restacks her notes in a way, making herself just busy and kind of avoiding your gaze.
So Mina's revenge is taking it out on my cousin.
I don't know. I can't tell you what exactly the particular reason this thing has been conjured, but clearly there was some great infraction or pain that has caused maybe Mina, and we don't even know it's Mina's, a spirit to seek vengeance. And the fact that a wedding is occurring and that's when it started seems to be that is some probably logical to assume. And she looks at you, Lou, like, I don't know what to say here.
I think that we need to speak to people again now that we have what this creature likely is and reframe some questions, kind of see what people's relationship was, and we need to be open to potentially some people who we thought in a certain light of could be not what we think they could be. But either way, whatever we find out, it seems like your cousin's probably going to be not in the best of ways if we don't figure this out soon.
Yeah, the end of these stories are usually not great if the mayor is just allowed to continue. So yeah, I would say time is of the essence. And if the marriage is happening tomorrow, it, yes, seems like this creature is getting angrier and angrier based on what we saw last night.
Lou's just looking at Tony.
Tony's very much trying to keep it together after hearing what Lou just inferred or implied. So she's going to walk out of the tent and go see her dad.
Lou just lets her have her space.
As Tony walks out, and Rook stands up and just bolts out after Tony. And so Tony, you're walking like down the way. There's a hand on your shoulder and Rook's like, hey, sorry, are you okay? I mean, you're clearly not okay, but like, is there anything I can do? You know, I'm sure things are never as easy as people say, especially people with paper and notes and the thing with the Fae. It's never that simple. So your family seems like good people and you're good people, and I don't think you should listen to that shit.
Oh, this is Rook talking to me? She's a little bit surprised that Rook is offering any kind of comfort. It's like, oh, yeah, I mean, well, thank you. I agree. I think this is bullshit, and I can't imagine my... Anyway, neither of them would do something so horrible.
I know. If they're anything like you, I know.
Yeah, I just need to talk to my dad. I mean, come with me if you want, but know that I'm telling him everything.
Yeah. No, I mean, I got your back.
All right, let's go.
So no matter what they say or what they think, I believe you.
She gives a very tight arm squeeze.
Yeah, she does back, totally does back. She's like, all right, cool. I don't really know what to do next, so I guess I'll just hang out, I get, like, outside. I don't want to, you know, do your...
That's fine. Yeah. I'll be right back.
And that's where we're going to end our episode. Woo! How are y'all feeling?
I'm feeling so much. You know those family dramas get me.
I know. Somebody said, oh my god, the favorite campaign is just like the family drama campaign. I'm like, yeah, it is. This is when you have big families and you have so many ties to the world and...
Oh my god, Aoife's got like 900 siblings alone.
I know. Wait till we like wait even till we even get there. God. Oh, what is going on with Aoife's family?
Well, Aoife is the oldest, so there's not a lot of drama happening with her mostly toddler siblings.
Babies.
Little kids.
The hottest goss is that your parents are super hot, circus folk, so that's just what that is. Yeah. Ooh, so hot. But yeah, so thank you all so much for stopping by, for sticking with us. Again, we are the Venture Maidens. If you enjoyed what you saw here, please do like, subscribe, follow, whatever platform you're on, do the thing. If you really enjoy us, of course, you can always go to Patreon. Patreon.com/VentureMaidens is where you can go to donate. Make either a one-time donation or, you know, a monthly donation to help support the show. We love all of our beautiful, wonderful patrons, and we will say thank you to the highest tiers in just a moment here. But before we go, we got some news. Heck yeah, you had some news, some updates you wanted to share as well, yes?
Yes, yes. So the news is about a little unchanged, but things are still progressing in Iran. Protests have not slowed down. They are increasing in size. As you are aware, hopefully by now, that it is a full-blown revolution, and the human rights atrocities happening in Iran are only growing by the day. And there's ways that you can help by remembering that your representatives work for you. And there is a link coming to chat right now. Those of you listening at home can go to NUFDIRAN or NUFDIRAN.org. That's NUFDIRAN.org. And there is a link for you to locate your local representatives, and whether Democrat, Republican, doesn't matter. It's not a political issue. There is a pre-written script that you can copy and paste, send to those representatives that requests attention on the human rights crisis in Iran, so that the representatives can find ways to support the freedom fighters on the streets. Sorry, my cat is all over the place while I'm saying this. It does not call for Western intervention. It's like giving internet access to protesters, drawing eyes on what's happening in Iran, getting Iran off the UN Council Commission for Women, things like that. And it would be really great if you could copy that, paste it, and send it to your representatives, and just continue to echo the voices that are coming from Iran itself. If you struggle at all to understand what those voices are saying because you're not Iranian, I totally understand. Follow me on social media. I follow a lot of human rights groups. I'm Nazgul everywhere online. And if you want to stay up to date that way, I'm posting all the time about the situation. So you can follow me as well. And thank you.
And as always, you can find those links. They're in the chat right now, and they will be included as well in the show notes of this podcast episode. So go and you can see it there in whatever app you're in. Click on the episode. You'll see it right there in the text. All right. Well, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, we like to take some time every episode to thank our Patreons who donate, or patron donors at the highest donor tiers, who really do just work tirelessly to keep the lights on by like giving us money every month. Thank you, you amazing, beautiful humans. I don't know if you know this, but podcasting doesn't make any money like on its own normally. So we put hours and hours and hours, basically full-time jobs worth of hours, into making this show for you, and it's completely free. So for those of you who see that and appreciate that, if you've ever done anything free for anyone else and you want to say thank you, highly recommend being like these goddamn heroes and donating at least something on Patreon to us. So we want to go around and say thank you, with starting with our Arnie's cohort tier. Thank you so much, Debbie.
Thank you, Curry.
And thank you, Muffin, at the one on Drury Lane on Twitter.
Indeed. And thank you, Nissa McKinnon.
And for our Ferris Drinking Mate tier, thank you so much, Chris.
Thank you, Markali.
Thank you, Fable.
Thank you, Tony. What's up?
Tony, thank you so much, Sheepish Gnome.
And thank you to our Wiki God, Ben, a.k.a. Flower Crown Gaming.
You beautiful God of Word. Wonderful. Well, thank you everybody so much for being here. I have been your Dungeon Master, Celeste Konowich.
Hello, my name's Katie, and I have played Luveri Sath, your Drow Rogue.
Hello, I'm Nassim, and I have been your Half-Orc Fighter, Tony Silvertail.
And I am Sage, and I have been your Bard, Aoife Flannery.
Yes! Well, thank you everybody so much for sticking with us through this long Knives Out juicy episode. And until next time, everybody.
Venture!